This is Kidding Around, a kid health podcast for everyone. Parents, grandmas, teachers, anyone who touches the life of a child. And I'm your host, Dr. Candace, a board-certified pediatrician and a mom of two. I sit down with expert guests to answer your questions about all things baby, child, and teen. So if you're wondering, why does she do that? Or how can I get rid of that rash? I got you. All right. Hello, hello. Welcome to Kidding Around. I'm Dr. Candace, and thank you so much for listening. So it's January. Again, Happy New Year. This month is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. And so we want to dedicate this show to talking about what is cervical cancer and how can we prevent it. That's what we're going to talk about today. My special guest is Dr. Shamika Varela Dixon, MD. She is the Director of Adolescent Medicine at Levine's Children's Hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for coming to Kid Around with me today, Dr. Dixon.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So I just want to give the audience some basics first. Just, you know, most people may know, but basically, what is cervical cancer? You know, what causes it? And just bring everybody up to speed on the state of it as referenced in adolescents and our children, what the trends are there and some statistics on that.
Okay. Alrighty. Again, thank you guys for having me. I'm very excited to be joining you. So cervical cancer is cancer of the cervix. So I typically show my teenagers a picture of the vagina. At the very top of your vagina is your cervix. Mm-hmm. It looks like a pink donut, and it's the door to your uterus, the door to your womb.
Okay.
So essentially what we know is over the course of a woman's lifehood, sometimes she encounters the HPV virus, some of us do, and it can lead to cervical cancer down the line, okay? And so somewhere in the early to mid-2000s, the HPV vaccine came out, mm-hmm. and that's to help prevent cervical cancer. It also helps to prevent genital warts, okay? And so what we know about cervical cancer is per Center for Disease Control's statistics, in 2014, approximately 12,500 women were diagnosed with a new case of cervical cancer. And we also know that approximately a little over 4,000 women die each year from cervical cancer.
Hmm.
By far, the majority of women who are diagnosed are in their 60s or their 50s. But occasionally, there's also a woman in her 20s or her early 30s that gets diagnosed with cervical cancer. And so this vaccine helps to decrease that risk of developing cervical cancer.
Absolutely. That puts it in perspective, right? So this mm-hmm. is something that, you know, I think people are hearing stories that younger women are and can be diagnosed with cervical cancer. And so like all cancers, we want to talk more about prevention. You know, we want to prevent it so we don't have to get down. We don't even have to get to the point of treatment and cure and all of those different things. So let's talk about that. And you mentioned it. You said that cervical cancer is cancer of the cervix, and that we know there's a link or connection between the HPV virus that
yes,
changes the nature of the cervix and sets everything up for this cancer to grow out of control. So
yes,
break it on down. Tell us, how are you getting this HPV virus in the vagina? How does it get to the cervix to cause all the problems?
Yes. So the human papillomavirus, HPV, is a virus that you contract through sexual contact, okay? So you actually don't even have to have intercourse to mm-hmm. obtain this virus. Technically, skin-to-skin rubbing can also transmit this virus, okay? It is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the world, okay?
Yeah.
And so, realistically, we know condoms help to decrease that spread, but again, like I said, it is a skin-to-skin virus, okay? And there are hundreds of strains of HPV, okay? So a lot of people know about HPV that can cause common warts on the fingers or the feet. That's also HPV, but that's a different strain than the ones that can cause warts on your genital area or cervical cancer, okay? Right. And so, like I said, it is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the world. And this vaccine helps to prevent you from getting the most common strains that cause cervical cancer and genital warts.
Right. Absolutely. And that, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know we're talking about cervical cancer, but it's a contact thing. So oral, vaginal, anal, any form of sex or heavy contact, you can spread it, like you said. And then we don't only have to worry about cancer. We have to worry about warts, which are unsightly and uncomfortable. And then now we know oral, esophageal cancers above the neck as well, anal cancers. So men, women, it can affect all of us and be spread through all of us, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's some extra you need to think about. So let's get to screening. So now we know how it happens. Who needs to start? Our screening for this HPV virus is the Pap test, right? So
yes, ma'am.
Explain that to our audience and kind of break down to our parents when their child needs to come in for that, who needs it, when do you need it to start doing that screening process?
Okay. So the new recommendations nationally and internationally is that people should be screened with a Pap smear test at 21. Okay. So a lot of moms and grandmas remember the Pap test. It requires a pelvic exam. So your doctor or your medical provider has to look inside your vagina, and then they swab the very top, that cervix, and they send that off to the lab, and they check and make sure there are no signs of cancerous cells or changes that may be suggestive of cancer.
Right. Okay.
So in the early 2000s, we did Pap smears on younger girls if they had started having sex. We would do it 3 years after they started having sex. Like I said, the newer recommendations as of 2010 is that we start at 21. Okay. The only exceptions to that are for my girls who are HIV positive, or if I have a patient that's immunocompromised. So maybe she's a transplant recipient, or she has a medical condition that has her own immunosuppressant medications, then she should get a Pap smear before 21. But for all my other girls, the recommendation, regardless of if you started having sex earlier or later, is 21.
Okay. All right. So that is a big change. So that's an update for everybody. Because, and are you comfortable with that? Because I know that's a debate among us, that, you know, that controversy over a few years.
Yeah. So I think by far I'm comfortable with it because so at our clinic here, I see patients 11 to 25. So I still get my patients in at 21. And the reason I'm comfortable, this is what I tell my parents. The reason I recommend delaying it to 21 is the reason that we decided to delay it is that we found that we were doing cancer screening at 15 or 16.
Right.
And then we would pick up slight abnormalities.
Mm-hmm.
And these young women were then sent for more invasive testing,
right,
where maybe they had a biopsy of their cervix. And what we know is down the line, it increased their risk of having cervical incompetency or preterm deliveries because their cervix couldn't remain closed.
Right.
Okay? What we also know about young women's bodies is even if you contact this virus, if you come in contact with it when you're a teenager, most women clear up any problems by the time they're in their 20s.
There you go.
So by delaying the testing, we're less likely to pick up some of these slight abnormalities that may have led to more aggressive screening and testing.
Right.
And so it's for their benefit to delay it, but I strongly recommend once you hit 21, you should be getting that testing. The recommendation is if your screening is normal, you can get it screened every 3 years. And I definitely know there's still debate and controversy about the frequency of getting a Pap smear test.
Right.
And I know me and my own gynecologist, we have our own conversations about this too. So there's definitely still controversy there. But I try and recommend to all my patients that they delay screening to 21 because it is for their advantage.
And if everything's normal, every 3 years. Now,
yes, ma'am.
What happens if it's abnormal? Now, that doesn't mean you have cancer. Doesn't mean I have cervical cancer if it's abnormal. You already hinted towards that. It may just be something that there's HPV there. There are some abnormal looking cells and you may clear it. But really, what happens? What are those steps, the most important message if you get an abnormal Pap back?
So I try my best for my patients that have an abnormal Pap to have them come back so we can have this conversation in person.
Right.
And by far, it does not mean you have cervical cancer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What it tells us is that Pap smear test, there are special doctors that look at your cells in a lab and they can determine if it looks like it's cancer or if it just looks like there's some slight changes to your cells that need to be followed. So for all of my patients, they typically have some slight changes. Sometimes that's because you have a yeast infection at the time or a sexually transmitted infection, or sometimes just because, you know, your body is clearing up its contact from HPV. But it requires you to be tested in a year most of the time, okay? So that the pathologists, the people that look under the microscope, are really clear when they're talking about it's just changes to the cervical cells versus cancer.
Okay.
So it's important that you follow up with your doctor so that you can go over your results. And if your results did show a slight abnormality, you just get rechecked when it's time. Right. There's no need to worry as long as you continue to follow up appropriately.
So when you get the Pap, don't just say, oh, I never heard anything, so I assume it's normal. You know, unfortunately, medical system is not perfect. Things fall through the cracks. Within, you know, a couple of weeks, you should be calling, what were my results, or make a follow-up appointment just to come in and talk about it. You want to hear that's clear or not. Now, and I know we don't want to go all into this, but truly if something comes back and it is cancer, you will definitely be transitioned to a specialist. Things will be, you know, done differently, more, you know, to go down that road is separate. But the main thing is follow up, find out, and follow the follow-up recommendations. Okay?
Yep, I agree.
So you mentioned it already, but the HPV vaccine. And there's other elements of prevention. You can mention those, but we do need to talk about the HPV vaccine because there is still, after all these years, so much controversy to address, even among parents who, for me, even among parents who vaccinate their kids through all the other vaccinations, they are just pausing on this one. They're hearing things in the community, at their church, and they equate it to sex. It's not a sex vaccine or STD prevention vaccine. It's a cancer prevention vaccine. So clear that up. What is your sell? How do you explain it and get them to get that vaccine?
So, I mean, first and foremost, I meet parents where they are. Okay. So we talk about what their specific concerns are about this vaccine. I also am a fairly frank physician.
Yeah.
I tell you, so HPV is contracted sexually. For the most part, that's how you get it. And like I said, it is the most common sexually transmitted infection. And of course, by no means do we want your child to have sex. Okay.
Right.
We want them to wait as long as they can until they're ready and in a healthy monogamous relationship, ideally.
Right.
But what we know is if it is the most common
STI,
sexually transmitted infection out there, at some point in your child's adult life, they will come in contact with this virus.
Right.
Okay. So a lot of times I tell parents, it's about prevention. We know hepatitis B is also contracted through sexual intercourse, and that doesn't stop us from giving it to our babies.
Okay? Right.
So it's important. Prevention is important. We know the earlier you get this vaccine, so ideally it is targeted at 11 to 12.
Right.
And the reason it's targeted that young is what we know about your body is when I give you a vaccine at 11, 12 compared to 16, 17, your ability to fight this virus is strong. We also know it's better if I give you the vaccine before you come into contact with this virus. If I wait to 16, 17, 18 to give you this vaccine, it's a good possibility that you've already started having sex and you may have already come in contact this virus or strain of this virus.
So
I'll still give it to you, but it may decrease this vaccine's effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And that's the best way to look at it. Are there any, I know there are, that you've heard, myths that we need to dispel about the safety of this vaccine?
So I think a lot of times I've had parents in the past have concerns about when it first came out, this vaccine, sometimes there were a push in certain communities to enforce this vaccine vaccination policy more than other communities. So sometimes I have families that are a little bit suspicious or not as trusting. And I always tell my parents, I push it on all of my patients, my girls, because like we said, not only does it cause that the virus cause cervical cancer, we know it causes esophageal cancer, penile cancer, rectal cancers.
Right.
Those are less common than cervical cancer, but they're definitely still out there.
Right.
And so I recommend it for all of my patients. I've had families concerned about things that they encounter on the internet, reading about fatigue and other chronic illnesses. This vaccine is similar to all the other vaccines we give.
Right.
There is no magical new component that is different in the HPV vaccine that is different from the meningitis vaccine or the tetanus vaccine that I gave your child.
Right.
And so I try and talk about whether they're concerned. And like I said, I'm also honest. You're right. There are risks with vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about that. We talk about the most common complaints, which for the most part would be pain at the site of injection. Sometimes you can have redness. Sometimes you can have swelling. Sometimes you might have a slight temperature. Sometimes you might have some muscle aches or fatigue shortly after getting this vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But by far, the side effects are similar to all the other vaccines.
That's right. One other thing I wanted to ask, and I don't think we clarified, what is the age range that you can receive the vaccine?
Okay. So right now, the present recommendations is that you start receiving this vaccine between 11 to 12. It can be given as young as 9 years old and up to 26. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's your age range. But right now, the target age group for the CDC's recommendation is 11 to 12. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a bonus. If you complete your series before you turn 15, like, so that's 14 years and 365 days, two vaccine series. Right. What we have shown, what studies have shown is that their ability to produce antibodies is just as good as doing the three vaccine series, okay? So if you start early and get it on time, all your child needs is two. But if you wait to start this series, which some families do, mm-hmm. then your child would need to complete a three vaccine to complete the series.
All right. And when you go in, they'll tell you when to come back and all those dates and things of that nature. You should have a little sticker or something to remind you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a form thing that we give families. And mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, I think this was very good basic information, but very important to maybe clear up some of the questions that parents have about cancer, cervical cancer prevention, about the HPV vaccine. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think it is wonderful cancer prevention, but I also remind my teenagers it is not fun when I have to freeze or burn warts off of your private areas.
That's right.
So it also helps to prevent that too.
Absolutely. Any resources that our families or parents or teens can look up if they want to look into more information about this subject?
Yes. So CDC.gov has some wonderful vaccine resources for families and for medical providers. And it gives you some great statistics about cervical cancer and then vaccine and that kind of data.
Awesome. Awesome. And for adolescent medicine, what is you guys' website?
So my website here at my organization is teenhealthconnection.org.
Okay. Okay. And then the overarching adolescent medicine website that may have some information. What is that?
Information, I like two resources. For my older adolescents, I like Young Women's Health. .org.
Okay.
And then kind of for parents and my younger teens, Kids Health also has, I want to say it's kidshealth.com, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
They have some good resources on different common things.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we thank you so much for giving us this wonderful information today. Very helpful. We all need it. Go get your HPV vaccine for your kids. I will be giving it to mine, as I'm sure you will be giving it to yours. So that's right. So thank you guys. I hope this was helpful. Thank you, Dr. Dixon, so much for coming on the show, and we'll talk soon.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something today to promote health and well-being in children. Let me know by subscribing to my website at drcandicemd.com and to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud at Kidding Around with Dr. Candice. Feel free to leave me comments and questions. I would love to hear them, and you never know, they may be on the show. Also, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dr. Candice MD. If you would like for me to be involved with your kid-related event or be a health expert on air, please feel free to contact me at info@drcandicemd.com. Thanks for listening. We'll kid around soon.